is to enter the firing squad yard, which means all the guns in this building should be disabled for exactly 2 minutes. Thank you, Kayade. I shove Thomas hard against the wall before he can regain his balance. Then I yank the knife from his belt, reach the electric grid box, and pull it open. Behind me, Thomas reaches for his gun, as if in slow motion. Stop her! I take the knife and slice through all the wires on the bottom of the electric grid. A pop, a shower of sparks, the entire basement goes black. I hear Thomas curse. He's discovered his gun is useless. Soldiers stumble over each other. I quickly feel my way to the stairwell. June! Thomas shouts from somewhere behind me. You don't get it! It's for your own good! The words come spilling out of my mouth in a rage. Yeah, is that what you told Mateus? Not much time before backup power kicks in. I don't wait around to hear Thomas's reply. I reach the stairs and jump up three at a time, counting the seconds since the electro bomb went off. 11 seconds so far, 109 seconds left before guns are functional again. I burst through the first floor door in a sea of chaos. Soldiers rushing out to the square, footsteps thundering everywhere. I make my way straight back towards the firing squad yard. Details zip around me like a highway of thoughts. 97 seconds left, 33 soldiers heading opposite me, 12 heading my direction. Some flat screens have gone dark, must be the power cut. Others show pandemonium in the crowd outside. Something's falling from the sky into the square. Money! The Patriots are raining money down from the roofs. Half the crowd's fighting to get out of the square, while the other half scrambling for the notes. 72 seconds. I reach the firing squad hall and take in the scene in an instant. 3 unconscious soldiers. John and Day, with a blindfold loose around his neck, which the guards must have put over his eyes right before the bomb went off, are fighting with a 4th. The others must have been called to help contain the square, but they won't be long now. They'll come back in no time. I run up behind them and kick the soldier's feet out from under him. He tumbles to the ground. John punches him in the jaw. The soldier goes limp. 60 seconds. Day looks unsteady, as if he might pass out. A soldier must have hit him across the head, or maybe his leg is giving him trouble. John and I support him between us. I guide us into a narrower hall, branching away from the firing squad corridors, and we start making our way towards the exits. Commander Jameson's voice blares out from the intercoms a second later. She sounds furious. Execute him! Kill him now! Make sure the square broadcasts it! Damn it, Day says under his breath. His head sways to one side. His bright blue eyes look dull and unfocused. I exchange a look with John and keep going. Soldiers will be on their way back now, back to drag Day out into the yard. 27 seconds. We're a good 250 feet from the exits. We're covering about 5 feet a second. 27 times 5 equals 135 feet. In 135 feet, guns will be reactivated. I can already hear soldiers' boots in the corridors adjacent to ours, pounding on the floor, probably searching for us. We need at least 23 more seconds to get to the doors before they catch us in this hall. They'll shoot us dead long before we can get out. I hate my calculations. John glances at me. We're not going to make it. Between us, Day has faded into a semi-conscious state. If the brothers continue and I run back to fight the soldiers, I'll probably only take down a few before they overwhelm me. They'll still reach John and Day. John stops walking, and I feel Day's weight shift over to me. What? I begin to say, until I see John pull the blindfold off of Day's neck. Then he turns around. My eyes widen. I know what he's going to do. No, stay with us! You need more time, John says. They want an execution, they'll get one. He starts running away from us, back down the hall, back toward the firing squad yard. No, John, where are you going? I waste a second looking back at him, torn in that instant, wondering if I should chase after him. John's going to do it. Then Day's head lolls against my shoulder. 6 seconds. I have no choice. Even as I hear the shouts of soldiers behind us, in the hall leading to the firing squad, I force myself to turn around and keep going. 0 seconds. Guns are reactivated. We keep going. More seconds pass. I hear a commotion in the hall somewhere behind us. I tell myself not to look back. Then we reach the exits, burst out into the street, and a pair of soldiers is upon us. I have no more strength to fight, but I try. Then, someone's wrestling with me, and the soldiers go down, and Kayade runs past my line of vision. "They're here," she shouts. "Move out!" They were lurking near the back exits, just like we agreed. The Patriots came for us. I want to tell them to wait for John, but I know it's no use. They grab us and lead us towards their motorcycles. I take the gun out from my belt and fling it to the ground. I can't have its tracker follow me now. Day goes on one motorcycle, I go on another. "Wait for John," I want to say. But then, we're off. Batala Hall moves away from us.
Day. A crack of lightning. An explosion of thunder. The sound of pounding rain. Somewhere far away, the wailing of flood sirens. I open my eyes, then squint at the water falling into them. For an instant, I can't remember anything. Not even my name. Where am I? What happened? I'm sitting right next to a chimney, soaking wet. I'm on the rooftop of a high-rise tower. Rain blankets the world around me, and wind whistles through my drenched shirt, threatening to lift me off my feet. I huddle against the chimney. When I look up at the sky, I see an endless field of churning clouds, jet black and furious, illuminated by lightning. Suddenly I remember. The firing squad, the hallway, the flat screens. John. The explosion, soldiers everywhere. June. I should be dead right now, filled with bullets. "You're awake." Slouched next to me, almost invisible against the night in a black outfit, is June. She's sitting awkwardly against the wall of the chimney, oblivious to the rain that runs down her face. I shift to turn toward her. A spasm of pain shoots up my injured leg. Words stick to my tongue and refuse to come out. "We're in Valencia. On the outskirts. The Patriots took us as far as they were willing. They've moved on to Vegas." June blinks water from her eyes. "You're free. Get out of California while you can. They'll keep hunting for us." I open and close my mouth. Am I dreaming? I scoot closer to her. One of my hands comes up to touch her face. What happened? Are you all right? How did you get me out of Batala Hall? Do they know you helped me?" June just stares at me, as if trying to decide whether or not to answer my questions. Finally, she glances over at the edge of the roof. "See for yourself." I struggle to my feet. Now I can look over the roof at the jumbotrons lining the walls. I limp to the edge of the rooftop and stare down from the railing. We're definitely in the outskirts. I can tell now that the building we're perched on is abandoned and boarded up, and only two jumbotrons along this entire block are functional. I look at the screens. The headline playing on them takes my breath away. "Daniel Alton Wing executed today by firing squad." A video recap plays behind the headline. I see the footage of me sitting in my cell. I look at the camera, then the video cuts to the yard where the firing squad lines up. Several soldiers drag a struggling boy out into the center of the yard. I remember none of this. The boy's blindfolded with handcuffs tightly behind him. He looks just like me, except for a few details that only I would notice. His shoulders are slightly broader than mine. He walks with what looks like a fake limp, and his mouth looks more like my father's than my mother's. I squint through the rain. It can't be. The boy stops in the center of the yard. His guards turn away and hurry back the way they came. A line of soldiers hoist their guns, then point them at the boy. There's a brief, horrible silence, and then smoke and sparks pour from the guns. I see the boy convulse with each shot. He collapses face down in the dirt. A few more shots ring out. Then the silence returns. The firing squad quickly files out. Two soldiers pick up the boy's body and take him away to the cremation chambers. My hands start to shake. The boy is John. I whirl to face June. She watches me quietly. "That's John!" I shout over the rain. "The boy is John! What was he doing out there, out in the yard?" June says nothing. I can't catch my breath. I understand what she did now.
You didn't take him back,
I managed to say.
You switched us instead.
I didn't do it, she replies.
He did.
I limp back to her. I grab her by the shoulders and push her back against the chimney.
Tell me what happened. Why did he do it?
I shout.
It should have been me!
June cries out in pain and I realize that she's injured. A deep gash runs across her shoulder, staining her shirt with blood.
What am I doing yelling at her?
I tear a strip of cloth from the bottom of my shirt and try to wrap her wound the way Tess would. I pull the cloth tight and tie it off. June winces.
It's not that bad, she lies. A bullet scraped me.
Are you hurt anywhere else? I run my hands down her other arm, then gently touch her waist and her legs. She's shivering.
I don't think so, she replies. I'm okay.
When I push wet strands of her hair behind her ears, she looks up at me.
Day,
it didn't go according to my plan. I wanted to get both of you out. I could have done it, but... The image of John's lifeless body displayed on the Jumbotron makes me lightheaded. I take a deep breath.
What happened?
There wasn't enough time. She pauses.
So John turned back.
He bought us time and he went back to the hall. They thought he was you. He even wore your blindfold. They grabbed him and took him back to the firing squad yard. She shakes her head again. But the Republic must know by now that they made a mistake.
You have to run, Day. While you can.
Tears stream down my cheeks.
I don't care.
I kneel in front of June and clutch my head in both hands, then sink to the floor. Nothing makes sense anymore. My brother was probably worrying about me while I moped in my cell like a selfish brat.
John put me first. Always.
He shouldn't have done it, I whisper.
I don't deserve it.
June's hand rests on my head. He knew what he was doing, Day. Tears appear in her eyes, too.
Someone needs to save Eden.
So John saved you.
As any brother would.
Her eyes burn into mine. We stay here, unmoving, frozen in the rain. It feels like an eternity. I remember the night that set this all in motion. The night I saw the soldiers mark my mother's door. If I hadn't gone to that hospital, if I hadn't crossed paths with June's brother, if I'd found a plague cure somewhere else, would things be different? Would my mother and John still be alive? Would Eden be safe? I don't know. I'm too afraid to dwell on the thought.
You threw everything away.
I bring a hand up to touch her face, to wipe rain from her eyelashes.
Your entire life. Your beliefs. Why would you do that for me?
June has never looked more beautiful than she does now, unadorned and honest, vulnerable yet invincible. When lightning streaks over the sky, her dark eyes shine like gold.
Because you were right, she whispers. About all of it.
When I pull her into an embrace, she wipes a tear from my cheek and kisses me. Then she buries her head against my shoulder, and I let myself cry.
June. 3 days later, Barstow, California, 11:40 p.m., 52 degrees Fahrenheit. Hurricane Ivonia has finally started to calm down, but the rain, heavy and cold, continues to fall in sheets. The sky churns in fury. Under all this, Barstow's lone Jumbotron broadcasts the news coming in from Los Angeles. Evacuations mandated for Zane, Griffith, Winter, Forest. All Los Angeles civilians required to seek shelter at 5 stories or higher. Quarantine lifted on Lake and Winter sectors. Republic wins decisive victory against colonies in Madison, Dakota. Los Angeles declares official hunt for Patriot rebels. Daniel Alton Wing, executed December 26 by firing squad. Of course the Republic would announce Day's execution as successful, even though Day and I know otherwise. Already the whispers have started in the streets and dark alleys, rumors that Day has cheated death once again, and that a young Republic soldier helped him do it. The whispers stay whispers, because no one wants to draw the Republic's attention. And yet, they continue to talk. Barstow, quieter than inner Los Angeles, is still overcrowded with people, but the police here aren't looking for us in the way police back in the metropolis must be. Railroad City, ramshackle buildings, a good place for Day and me to take shelter. I wish Ollie could have come with us too. If only Commander Jameson hadn't pushed the execution up a day. I wanted to let him out of the apartment, hide him in an alley, and then go back for him. But it's too late now. What will they do to him? The thought of Ollie barking at soldiers breaking into my apartment, scared and alone, brings a lump to my throat. He's the only piece of Mateus I have left. Now, Day and I struggle through the rain back to the rail yard, where we're going to set up camp. I'm careful to stay in the shadows, even on this stormy night. Day keeps a cap on and tilted low over his eyes. I've tucked my hair inside the collar of my shirt and wrapped an old scarf, now soggy, across the lower half of my face. It's about all we can do for disguises right now. Old railway cars litter the junkyard, faded and rusted with age. 26 of them, if you count a caboose missing half of one side. All Union Pacific. I have to lean into the wind to keep from falling over. The rain stings my wounded shoulder. Neither of us says a word. When we finally reach an empty car, a 450-square-foot covered hopper with two sliding doors, one rusted shut, the other halfway open, must be designed for carrying dry bulk freight, safely tucked behind three others at the back of the yard, we climb inside and settle down in a corner. Surprisingly clean, warm enough, most important, dry. Day takes off his cap and wrings out his hair. I can tell his leg is hurting. Good to know the flood warnings are still in place. I nod. Should be hard for any patrol to track us in this weather. I pause to watch him. Even now, exhausted and messy and completely soaked, he has an untamed sort of grace about him. What? He stops wringing out his hair. I shrug. You look terrible. This makes Day smile a little, but it disappears as fast as it comes. Guilt takes its place. I fall silent. Can't blame him. As soon as the rain stops, he says, I want to head out towards Vegas. I want to find Tess and make sure she's safe with the Patriots before we move on to the warfront to find Eden. I can't just leave her behind. I have to know that she's better off with them than with us. It's as if he's trying to convince me that this is the right thing to do. You don't have to come. Take a different route to the warfront and meet me there. We can decide on a rendezvous point. Better just to risk one of us than both. I want to tell Day that it's insane to head for a military city like Vegas, but I don't. All I can picture are Tess's hunched, narrow shoulders and wide eyes. He's already lost his mother, his brother. He can't lose Tess, too. You should go find her, I say. You don't have to talk me into it, but I'm coming with you. Day scowls. No, you're not. You need backup. Be reasonable. If something happens to you along the way, how will I know you're in trouble? Day looks at me. Even in this darkness, I can't take my eyes off him. The rain has washed his face clean. The scarlet stripe of blood in his hair is gone. Only a few bruises remain. He looks like an angel, if a broken one. I look away embarrassed. I just don't want you to go alone. Day sighs. All right, we'll go to the warfront and find out where Eden is, then cross the border. The colonies will probably welcome us, maybe even help us. The colonies. Not long ago they had seemed like the greatest enemy in the world. Okay. Day leans towards me. He reaches up to touch my face. I can tell it still hurts him to use his fingers, and his nails are dark with dried blood. You're brilliant, he says, but you're a fool to stay with someone like me. I close my eyes at the touch of his hand. Then we're both fools. Day pulls me to him. He kisses me before I can say more. His mouth feels warm and soft, and when he kisses me harder, I wrap my arms around his neck and kiss him back. In this moment, I don't care about the pain in my shoulder. I don't care if soldiers find us in this railway car and drag us away. I don't want to be anywhere else. I just want to be here, safe against Day's body, wrapped in his tight embrace. It's strange, I say to Day later, as we both curl up on the floor. Outside, the hurricane rages on. In a few hours, we'll need to head out. It's strange being here with you. I hardly know you, but sometimes it feels like we're the same person born in two different worlds. He stays quiet for a moment, one hand absently playing with my hair. I wonder what it would have been like if I'd been born into a life more like yours, and you had been born into mine. Would we be just like we are now? Would I be one of the Republic's top soldiers, and would you be a famous criminal? I lift my head off his shoulder and look at him. I never did ask you about your street name. Why Day? Each day means a new 24 hours. Each day means everything's possible again. You live in the moment. You die in the moment. You take it all one day at a time. He looks towards the railway car's open door, where streaks of dark water blanket the world. You try to walk in the light. I close my eyes and think of Mateus, of all my favorite memories, and even the ones I'd rather forget, and I picture him bathed in light. In my mind, I turn to him and give him a final farewell. Someday I'll see him again, and we'll tell our stories to each other. But for now, I lock him safely away in a place where I can draw on his strength. When I open my eyes, Day is watching me. He doesn't know what I'm thinking, but I know he recognizes the emotion on my face. We lie there together, watching the lightning and listening to the thunder, and waiting for the beginning of a rainy dawn.
This is Stephen Kaplan. We hope that you've enjoyed this production of Legend. This program was executive produced by Patty Peruse and produced and directed by Robert Kessler. Legend is a production of Penguin Audio, a member of Penguin Group USA, Inc. Copyright 2011. All rights reserved. The book Legend is available wherever G.P. Putnam's Sons books are sold.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.